The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Stay tuned for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz, and I am your host for this podcast. And we're going to have a great time together talking about money, finance, taxes, estate planning, and everything in between. This is going to be your opportunity to really participate through either our mailbox, maybe a call-in or two, questions and answers, etc. What we're going to have is guests on board to be talking about money. We're going to have some great experts to help you along. We're going to talk about stocks. We're going to talk about the ways in which you can actually make money, protect your money, and in the ways in which that you really need to structure your finances. So, different than other podcast radio shows, this one is all about you. Tell me what you want to hear. Tell me what you want to talk about, and I'll make it happen. Today, we're going to be talking about a variety of things. You know, we've had a lot of things happen in the past week that have been quite startling. In fact, maybe even frightening for many. You know, it's March 1st, and here we are only a few days beyond the historic movement of the Dow Jones Industrial Average that happened 2 days ago on Tuesday. On Tuesday, we saw this miraculous move of the markets within about a 20 or 30 second time period. We went from a Dow Jones that was down about 250 to 260 points to a Dow Jones that instantly went down over 500 points. A lot of questions surround that. You know, why did that happen? How did that happen? Is it going to happen again? And here's what I can tell you from all the research that I've done. First of all, realize that it was a bit of an anomaly. Clearly, there was something wrong in the markets. There's been questions raised about the hybrid system of the New York Stock Exchange, where they still use specialists in an auction format to trade stocks on the floor. Whereas other markets, such as the NASDAQ and most other markets throughout the world, are exclusively on a terminal basis where they're doing a match trade from buyer and seller. We have Instinet. We have things like Supermontage and Archipelago. These are matching systems that allow for buyers and sellers to get together in a virtual way when they want to move a stock. The New York Stock Exchange is still working on an auction base where you have a specialist inside of what's called a pit that is in charge of a certain sector or a certain amount of stocks. And what happens there is that they are charged with the responsibility of creating and maintaining an orderly process with the buying and selling of a stock. And what happened on Tuesday was that this new hybrid system has been entered into over the last few months really kind of got its work cut out for it that day. Because what happened was there was a tremendous overload in selling that went on since the beginning of the open at 9:30 in the morning. And what we saw there was, I think, an inability for the hybrid system to really handle things correctly. In the blog on the site, thedisciplinedinvestor.com/blog, I talked about how the hybrid system has a couple of flaws and possibly one of the liquidation or liquidity features that was inside of the hybrid system maybe had something to do with it, where it slowed down the process of trades. And many of the trades were known to be stuck for the day, and the investigation will continue and go on for some time as we look at exactly how this happened and what they're going to do about it to take care of it. But I will tell you this, that the anomaly was dramatic, yet it was very short-lived because it was an anomaly. It was a technical aspect of the markets that failed. It was not the action, in my opinion, of the markets players and the markets themselves that actually made stocks go down. Now, that may not make you feel any better after you lost so much money during that time period. But what I will tell you is if you look carefully at what your stocks and your mutual funds and your investments did for that day, the probability is that you didn't lose as much as you could have lost during the downslide of about 250 points in the mid-afternoon. And that was specifically because it really was more of a phantom movement in the markets than it was, in fact, a real movement. The following day, we saw a tremendous amount of a catch-up as the Fed chief was speaking, up almost 125 points. And we saw resilience into the market on Thursday as well. Even though it started out down significantly, it moved up very nicely over the time period throughout the end of the day, and in fact was positive for much of the afternoon. But what's interesting to know is that many people have become a bit complacent, in my opinion, when it comes to the stock market, because we've had such a nice run of it over the last 6-7 months. This is the same thing that happened to the real estate market, which we're going to get into in a minute. But the real estate market and the stock market have a lot of things in common, namely that people like to make money. People are looking for an opportunity. And what the stock market offers them is that opportunity. And unfortunately, when things go well for such a long period of time, we all become rather complacent in the fact that, you know, it may not move down. It's probably only going to move up. But we all know that things are cyclical. And I want you to remember that and make sure that you understand that going into this scenario. We do not see any particular economic circumstances, earning circumstances, or any underlying fundamentals that look like we should have seen a significant turn down like we did in the market on Tuesday. So what I want you to do is not worry so much about really what happened, that anomaly on Tuesday, and really focus on where the markets are going moving forward. And if we do that, I think you're going to be really set for a nice run, maybe a few shakeouts more in the future as there is this fear inside the markets. But the run will continue for some time as we are seeing record low interest rates. We're still seeing a good amount of money flow into the markets, and we're seeing investors still rather confident, as well as consumers rather confident. So again, this podcast is going to talk about a variety of things. We're going to talk about market issues. We're going to talk about real estate, estate planning, tax matters, just a whole slew of things. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a quick break and come back in a moment. And when we get back, we're going to be talking about some matters pertaining to taxes and some of the things you need to be doing right now in order to get yourself ready for that dreaded day, April 15th. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Yeah, you. Come a little closer. Did you know that you can get your copy of The Disciplined Investor in print form? Yeah. You can download it today at thedisciplinedinvestor.com.
Okay, break's over. Let's rejoin our regularly scheduled podcast.
And welcome back. Again, this is Andrew Horowitz, and you are listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And right now, we're going to kind of change subjects. We talked about the market of this week, which obviously you've heard a lot about, and you've probably been thinking about over and over what happened that day. But let's switch gears for a minute and talk about taxes, because tax time is coming up, and I'm seeing more and more requests for tax information from clients. And really what we're looking at right now is, how do we prepare for this April 15th? What do we do to make it a lot easier? Because if you're like me, I don't like that day. I don't like even thinking about that day. I don't like thinking about the things I need to do for that day. You know, it's kind of a realization that this is money that I have to pay, and I just don't like dealing with it. But here's a few tips that I can give you to make it a little bit easier on yourself. You know, number one, what you want to do is stay organized. Now, that may seem like a pretty trite statement, something that you obviously know about, but you know, here's what you do. In the beginning of every single year, start a new file that says 2006 or 2007 taxes. Take that file and start putting in all the information throughout the year that pertains to your taxes. When you are ready to put in more information, like your 1099Rs or your W-2s or your 1099 miscellaneouses or K-1s, whatever is going in there, continue to put things in that file. So again, organization is very important. The second thing, don't wait to the last minute. One of the worst things that you can do is wait to the last minute, bring all your things to your accountant, whether it is in fact organized or in a shoebox, overflowing. Yes, some of us do that, right? Don't do that, because what's going to happen is it's probably going to make your accountant have a little bit more of anxiety when he's dealing with this and push it off to the side. If you give your accountant a good reference, a nicely organized package, and help them along in the process, it's probably going to get done that much faster and with less mistakes. Sure, accountants do make mistakes. We pay them not to, of course, but they do. And some of that is dependent on how we, as the taxpayer and how's the client, give the information to our accountant. So organization, do it early. Two important things. Third, when we're thinking about whether or not to make purchases, when we're thinking about whether or not to make deposits into our IRAs or into an investment, when we're thinking about our pension plans, spend some time talking with your financial professional. I don't know, maybe it's your accountant, your financial planner, whoever it may be. Spend some time looking at what the benefits are for you to do this in the future. For example, an IRA. We can have a Roth IRA. We can have a regular IRA. There's money that we can put in our pensions at work, potentially a 401k. Maybe even we can do a tax sheltered annuity. What are the benefits? Which one should I use? Well, let's take one as an example that seems to come up over and over. And that's the discussion of a Roth IRA versus a regular IRA. A regular IRA, you have obviously a certain amount that you can put in dependent on your income levels and whether or not you are a participating individual inside of a currently qualified pension plan. But let's take for the moment that in fact you can deposit money into an IRA and it's going to be tax deductible. Let's make that assumption going ahead. Well, if you can do so, I think the biggest issue when we look at the difference between a Roth IRA, which is an IRA that allows you to put money in after taxes, let it grow on a tax-deferred basis, and then eventually take it out tax-free, as opposed to a traditional IRA, which gives you the opportunity to put in money pre-tax. In other words, you get a tax deduction on it, let it grow tax-deferred, and then when you do, in fact, take it out of that IRA, you will have to pay taxes on it at that time. Both of them have their minimum required time period or age that you have to wait in order to take out the money. But here's the rub. If you are young and you look at the comparison through maybe an Excel spreadsheet scenario or just by doing the simple math, the longer you have to invest, the better it is and the more benefit it is for you to go with the Roth IRA. And it's simply because of this. If you think about the effect of compounding interest over time, realize that that's going to hopefully benefit you, assuming that either the markets or your investment goes up over time. And if it does so, what's going to be really interesting to note is the money that you will have at the time that you actually withdraw the money will be a lot more substantial than the money you deposited. Okay, with an individual IRA, you can take a instant tax deduction on the money today at the smaller amount. But yet, when it grows to that much larger amount in the future, you'll have to pay taxes on that. The more time you have, the larger that sum becomes. Now, on the other hand, with a Roth IRA, what's going to happen there is the exact opposite. Because if you can now take out money from the Roth IRA on a tax-free basis, when the money is at the height of its total value, think about that. And because the longer you have for the time period of growing it from the time you deposit it, the greater that sum is going to be and therefore the greater benefit you will have tax-wise. Sure, you lose out on the taxes today by not taking the tax deduction, but the Roth IRA gives you an unbelievable opportunity if you have, let's say, 20 or 25 years in which you're going to allow the money to grow and then take it out sometime in the future because, again, it's going to be tax-free. So when you consider a Roth IRA versus an individual IRA for this tax season, for this tax year of 2006, for which you have until April 15th in order to make your decision, if you are under the age of approximately 40, it makes just a whole heck of a lot of sense to put money into a Roth IRA rather than a traditional IRA. If you can qualify to do so, think about the long-term benefits that you will be getting by putting your money into a Roth IRA because, again, you'll have that tax-free deduction available. So when we talk about taxes, a little bit of planning goes a long way instead of just throwing money into the wind because you should get an IRA and you figure you must as well just get an IRA. Well, a little planning goes a long way into figuring out which one it is going to be, which one is going to really benefit you in the future. And, you know, I'll tell you something. I'd rather have a lot more money in the future that's going to be tax-free than a few dollars today that I'm going to be able to take a tax deduction on. Now, when we kind of go through the whole process of taxes and realize that, you know, organization's important, a little bit of planning's important, and these are kind of really just philosophical matters, I think that you'll get a lot better off because you'll have, instead of a rush job when you're doing your taxes and only the ability to do your taxes rather than planning, it's going to be a really good benefit. Now, let me tell you one other thing you need to know about taxes right now that is really important for you if you are over the age of 70 and a half or if you know somebody over the age of 70 and a half. A little known tax code ruling happened in this year, and we're not sure if it's going to be actually extended through 2007 and 2008, excuse me, all the way into the future. But here's what it is. If you're over the age of 70 and a half and you have a required minimum distribution from your IRA, what is really nice to know is if you are charitably inclined, the money that you have to take out of your IRA can actually be used to benefit a charity without any taxation to you. So again, money that is required to come out from your IRA through a required minimum distribution after the age of 70 and a half, during the tax year of 2007, you can take it out, have it paid to a charity, and you will not be taxed on it a bit. The charity gets the full benefit of the money, and you don't have to pay taxes. A great benefit for you if you're looking to give away some money. It doesn't have to be all of the money. It doesn't have to be only a part. You can do whatever you want with it, but up to the maximum of the required minimum distribution can be paid to a charity. A little known feature of the tax code that can really help you out a lot, especially if you have a significant amount of money that you're willing to or desire to give away, or a part that you want to give away, can make you a hero real quick and really do a great benefit for you tax-wise.
Hey, don't go jumping around the directory. We've got more coming up. We'll be right back.
Hey, gang. Andrew Horowitz here. And do you have a question that you would like us to answer on an upcoming episode? Well, all you have to do is submit that question at the blog site, which is www.thedisciplinedinvestor.com/blog. Submit your question in what we call the mailbag, and we'll be sure to answer it very, very soon. And welcome back. This is Andrew Horowitz, and this is the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We're going to talk about a stock now that I just picked up. I think it's going to be a real winner moving forward. It's something that I've been watching for some time now, and it is part of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Dow Jones 30. The stock is Caterpillar. Caterpillar has been a bit underplayed for some time. It has been a little bit of a laggard in the recent months due to the fact that there's a big concern that housing, construction, overall building is going to slow. And obviously Caterpillar, the maker of those big, beautiful trucks and engines, diesel engines for the automotive, boating, ship, airplane industry, has really seen a bit of a, I would say, a slowdown in overall buying activity. But when you look at the markets and the cycles that we're in currently, it would seem that this makes a lot of sense when we have a stock that is significantly below the industry average when it comes to the PE ratio on a current and forward basis. Their PEG ratio, their price to earnings growth, is 0.84, again showing a stock that has great growth potential without a lot of risk because the growth rate of the company is less than the price earnings ratio moving forward. Another good sign. We see price to sales, price to book being very well in line and below industry average. The best investment out there is their own stock. And if Caterpillar is seeing that their own stock in this market environment, in a time when we're seeing recession words being said so easily by the likes of Greenspan and some of the other compadres up on the hill, I think that, you know, maybe there's something to be said about the fact that there may be a soft landing, as the president of Caterpillar had recently discussed in a telephone conference. In addition to that, when you look at the pricing of Caterpillar, you'll see that on a technical analysis basis, the Caterpillar has seen a really nice basing of its stock for a number of months. It's within a range that has not been broken out. And if, in fact, we see a breakout from this level of Caterpillar, it makes little sense. Now, listen, don't go out and just back up the truck and buy a ton of Caterpillar. What I want you to do is what I recommend all the time is nibble at it. Buy 100 shares. Buy 200 shares. buy 50 shares, you know, kind of add it up in your portfolio slowly. Build on it. Take a little bit at a time, dollar cost average in, because you don't want to be stuck in a market downturn with a lot of one stock versus another. The sector that it's in, which I would call the really the construction sector and the housing sector and the building sector, is a sector that I have some trepidation about due to the fact that we're seeing such a slowdown of consumers and businesses in the building process. Yet, Caterpillar is one of those great blue chips that throughout many, many different market cycles has always been solid. And in addition to that, what I find with Caterpillar is that it, in fact, will be a defensive play if the markets do turn sour. So you have the benefit of really catching it in the trough of the economic cycle that was against it for so much time. And in addition to that, you have it paying about a 2% dividend, give or take, but in a position that gives you some defensive opportunity in this market that is a bit volatile. So Caterpillar really is a great stock, in my opinion, right now to pick up. Again, it's the beginning of March when you're listening to this. Watch the stock price, get in slowly, but I think that you'll be very pleased sometime out in the future when we see the markets kind of level off and get a little bit more normalized, if there's ever such a thing with markets. And Caterpillar will see a decent run if it breaks out from its resistant points right now. These are kind of some of the things that we talk about in the book, The Disciplined Investor, the idea of resistant points and support. We talk about ratios in the fundamental analysis chapter. All these things will be a lot clearer to the novice or the beginner once you've gone through The Disciplined Investor as a book and you spend some time really understanding that. So while some of these things I go over quickly in the podcast, you know, you come back to the blog, take a look at the book, and you'll find a lot of these things are explained pretty well. We're going to take another quick break, one last one, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about identity theft and how to protect yourself, because I'll tell you about a situation that happened to me this week with eBay and identity theft, and I think you'll be pretty surprised at how tricky they're getting and how advanced they're getting. So stick around. The Disciplined Investor will be right back.
Download your copy today of The Disciplined Investor only at thedisciplinedinvestor.com.
Hey gang, Andrew Horowitz here. And do you have a question that you would like us to answer on an upcoming episode? Well, all you have to do is submit that question at the blog site, which is www.thedisciplinedinvestor.com/blog. Submit your question in what we call the mailbag, and we'll be sure to answer it very, very soon.
Now, welcome back to the show.
And welcome back to The Disciplined Investor. This is Andrew Horowitz, your host for this podcast. And when we left off a minute ago, I had told you that I was going to tell you a story about identity theft and fraud that happened to me this week. And I think that I am pretty good when it comes to trying to figure out who's phishing and who's looking to get into my pocketbook, who's looking to maybe steal my identity, and who's looking to really maybe spam me in a way that is going to get me somehow. I have all the filters on my computers. I put phishing filters on Firefox and Internet Explorer. And at the same time, I'm always keeping my eyes and ears open for what's around the corner. Well, this week what happened was this. I was selling a laptop on eBay, a laptop that I recently replaced, and I had to get rid of it in order to make some kind of financial sense out of my recent purchase. And I got an email in the afternoon that was asking me if I would sell the laptop for a price $500 above the price I was asking. Now, I said to myself, who in their right mind is going to pay $500 more for a laptop than the person is asking? I read the email and it said something to the effect that this gentleman who was purchasing it was desiring to do a quick trade and a transaction that would be very, very quick to buy his girlfriend a laptop for Christmas. Now, wait a minute. That stopped me right there. I said, Christmas? It's March. Who's thinking that far ahead to buy for Christmas? Okay, I read on. It said that he was willing to do so because he worked on a ship and he only gets 2 weeks vacation every number of months. And if he wasn't able to buy it now, he wouldn't be able to buy it at all. okay, that made a little sense. So I thought it through, and as I was reading further, he said, now, what I'd like you to do, please, is accept my payment when I pay, accept my buy when I buy, and please log on to the instant messenger of either AOL or Microsoft. He needs to talk to me about it immediately. Now, that I thought was strange. I wrote him back. I said, you know, if you want to buy the laptop, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But I don't have instant messenger and I really can't talk to you, because I really wasn't sure what was going on with the instant messenger discussion. Was he going to somehow try to send a virus through? Was he going to try to somehow take over my computer? I didn't know. I wasn't interested. I figured if he wanted to buy it like anybody else, he can buy it. So a few minutes later, wrote me back again. He said, okay, he's going to buy it. And then please sign on to my instant messenger. He needs to talk to me about it. I wrote him back saying, thank you very much. I don't have instant messenger. I look forward to seeing your purchase. Well, fast forward about 20 minutes. He, in fact, did buy the eBay item for $1,750 when I was only asking $1,500. Again, strange. And he had increased the postage amount by double because he wanted me to make sure that I got it to him. A very generous man. Well, when I looked him up a little bit further, I found, number one, that the email address that he was using for all this was from a company that supplied disposable emails. And what is a disposable email? That is an email that you can get that will have maybe a 24 or a 48 hour existence, and then it will be disintegrated, kind of like Mission Impossible and Mr. Phelps disintegrating the tape after he gave the instructions. But what would happen is that the email that went to that address would be forwarded. I looked a little further and I found that the eBay information that he had been changed that day, and that the information he had must have been changed somehow. So now I got really suspicious. A PayPal bill came to me, and it said that this gentleman was paying and that I need to log into PayPal in order to get my and claim my payment. I said to myself, wait a minute, that's a little odd. Number one, a PayPal statement is coming to me. It is marked all over the place with phishing through the Hotmail account that I use. And it's just not in the sequence that it usually goes when I do something on eBay. So what I figured out was this, that what he was doing was a transaction with me, making me all excited about the transaction, getting me to try to log on to my PayPal system, and when I did, capturing all my information from the PayPal so then he can go in my account and then utilize it and utilize it for identity theft as well as spending money on it. I contacted eBay. They got back to me within about 24 hours, which I found wasn't quick enough, quite honestly, and told me that this account that was being used has been compromised, and the individual that was using it was not the actual owner, and they were revoking the rights to it and turning it around. In addition, PayPal got back to me and told me it was an incorrect email. It was a spoof, as they call it. It was fraud. And then I did find about the email, it was a fraudulent transaction on the email. All of this was a problem. Everything didn't make sense. Now, all of a sudden, I am out a laptop, although I didn't send it. I'm out the advertisement on eBay, and eBay said that I can go in and try to get my money back. Well, thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for helping me through this process, and thank you for really doing nothing for me, making me figure all this out. And right now, I am very concerned about the security of my putting things up on eBay, questioning some of the things that go on. I'll also tell you that in no way is this a derogatory comment about any country, but what I did find out that was that when he asked me to send it, it was to Nigeria. His original address said that he was from New York, but when he wrote me back in one of his emails that asked me about getting on instant message, of course, which was quite unbelievable to me. Again, I don't know what he was trying to do with that. But he was from Nigeria, which is the place that has the most scams via the internet than anywhere in the world. It's known clearly that both Nigeria and the Pacific Rim are the number one providers of spam and phishing and theft of internet-based, whether it's identity or money. Well, I must tell you that when looking at the thing that happened to me about 24 hours since it happened, I realized that this is something that could happen to anyone. And unless you were pretty sophisticated, I got to tell you, you probably wouldn't have figured it out. And you may have actually given the information because it all looks so real. On a second note, I got a call just this morning and a fax because my father-in-law got a letter on his email and it told him that he won 500,000 British pounds in a lottery. All he had to do was supply his information, like his name, address, social security number, etc., to the company. When they receive it in good order, they will give him the information about wiring, and he will have to provide his wiring information as well so that they can then send the money. Now, if you think about it, what a classical example of, again, a spoof, if you will, or a fraudulent email trying to get control of his account information. Because he would probably say, what do I have to lose if he can't send the information in? He can't. But in fact, by doing so, allows these criminals to get access to your accounts. Do not fall for this stuff. It's becoming more and more rampant because it's so hard to trace. The idea of being spoofed by bad emails that are seemingly harmless and from the companies that you expect them to be from is so easy to set up. Hyperlinks where you click on the link and move to the area that they say to on their site can also look like the actual website of PayPal, MasterCard, American Express, Bank of America, wherever it is. Don't be fooled. So in summary, again, we just have to keep our eyes and ears open. This goes for whether it's our taxes, be organized, whether it goes for the internet fraud to make sure that we're not doing something just for the sake of doing it. And we know what we're doing with our eyes wide open, our ears wide open, and with a bit of skepticism. Well, thank you so much for joining me for this edition of The Disciplined Investor. I hope you get the opportunity to take a look at the blog and to take a look at the book itself. You can go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and take a look at the chapters that are available. The Disciplined Investor will be available in bookstores very shortly, but if you want to get an advanced copy, you can do so by download at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. The next episode of the Disciplined Investor podcast is going to focus on a few more stocks that I think you're going to be pretty excited about. We're just finishing up some research on about three or four different stocks, and we're going to give you some really good ideas on how to actually trade on a swing trade basis, and we're going to have an interview with a CPA telling us about some last minute tax ideas. So stick around with me. Thanks for joining me. This is Andrew Horowitz, the Disciplined Investor, saying have a great week, and I'll see you the next time on the podcast for The Disciplined Investor.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in and be sure to subscribe.